Hello there. I'm back with the second edition of the special Cross-Country Ski World Cup Race Report. It's still Hear Her Sports, and I'm still Elizabeth Emery, but today we are doing something slightly different. The race reports are short and post between main episodes. The term race reports is somewhat of a misnomer because while we do talk about the racing, we also take a look at the backstory of the racing and lessons learned. Be sure to listen to the first episode with Julia Kern on Ruka World Cup. And with me today is the stellar Rosie Brennan to look back at the Jalavari World Cup in Sweden. It was another cold one, and again, the U.S. did great. In the 10K freestyle, Rosie tied for sixth, Jesse Diggins won, and three U.S. women finished in the top 15. And in the 4x7.5 kilometer team relay, the U.S. finished third. Rosie goes over what it's like to race in a team relay and some tactics specific to this last weekend. The Jalavari World Cup took place on December 2nd and 3rd. Rosie talks about the course, which is very different from the previous week in Ruka. We also talk about bountiful podium gift bags, balancing wanting to increase fitness with also wanting some pop on race day, Rosie's youthful ski age, and gratitude, which is a lovely way to head into the new year. Rosie also offers one of the best discussions I've heard of what life on the road is like. If you don't already know Rosie Brennan, you are in for a real treat. She started strong right off the bat at the first World Cup of the season in Ruka, Finland, where she was on the podium twice. In the 10K classic race, she finished second, which was her first individual classic podium of her career. And then the very next day, she finished third in the 20K skate. But Rosie has a strong history. She's a four-time U.S. champion, 2018 and 2022 Olympian, and has been on the national team for 10 years. She also lives in Alaska, which means she is very tough. Here's Rosie. Well, hello, Rosie. It is so great to have you here. I'm just so excited to be doing these race reports, and you're doing so well. Everyone is doing so well. And it's super fun to see all the Americans right up there in the mix, you know, duking it out with everybody else. It's great.
Yeah, it has been really great. We've had a strong start to the season. And yeah, I'm excited to be here. I've listened to some of your podcasts previously, so it's great to get my chance to be a guest as well.
Oh, well, wonderful. So today we're going to be talking about Jalavari. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well enough. Anyway, yeah. It's in Sweden, and the relay looked great. You were on the podium, so I have to satisfy my curiosity a little bit. Like, what was all that swag that you guys got?
Yeah, good question. We got we got a block of cheese, so that's always kind of the exciting part.
How big was that?
The blocks of cheese are close to 3 kilograms of cheese. It's a lot of cheese. So our team is definitely rolling in the cheese right now. So that's great. And then there was some chocolate and some a charging cable, which is very random, but also incredibly useful. some like, I don't know how you say it, like glug. I think it's kind of like the Scandinavian version of like glühwein or something like that.
I've never heard of that.
It's like kind of a spiced wine that you heat up.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I haven't dug into it yet. And yeah, what else? I think that's about it. Oh, and some tea. Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice little package.
Yeah, it was nice.
Cool. Well, other than all of that stuff, how did the race go for you?
It was good. Relays are just, they tend to be fun races, I think. And Saturday was like, yeah, it was a fine enough race for me, but I definitely didn't feel that I skied to my best ability. And so I was thankful to get like a second chance. And my classic skiing has been feeling really good. So I was excited to be on the classic leg, and Jesse skied such a strong first leg. And so I just, I don't know. I didn't really ski the way I had intended to, but she tagged me off in a position that I thought, well, you know, maybe if I can break them now, maybe there's a chance that I can like keep a gap. So I just decided to go with it and go with the feelings that I, and the excitement that I had when I got tagged off, and I skied a very hard first lap and definitely was suffering my second lap, but did my best to kind of just keep moving and to keep the gap as big as I could, knowing that we would need that against some of the other teams in the later legs. And so, yeah, it was a unique and fun experience. I haven't had that experience in a relay before, and we tried it kind of a new order than we normally do. And so, yeah, it was really nice to like just try something new and get a new experience and kind of expand, you know, our options in the relay.
Talk a little bit more about that order and, you know, like the tactics of that and what went into the decision. I'm so curious about how you guys came to that.
Yeah, it's always tricky because, I mean, it would be nice if we could just be like, oh, here's our order, we're going to do this every time. But the thing is, like having four people skiing at their best on the same day is remarkably challenging, especially when we only have, I think we had seven women over here to choose from. So it's not like, you know, we can just call up somebody from the US and fly them in because they're skiing fast. You know, that's not really an option. So that's like what makes the relay special, I think, is to get four people that are skiing fast at the same time is kind of that challenge. And so we always have to look at kind of like where everyone is at right then and do our best to kind of make up the order based on the strengths of the different people that are skiing well at that moment. And then balance that out with what, you know, we think the other teams might do. And so traditionally, leg two has always kind of been a leg where people put their more distance-oriented athletes to kind of like blow things up a bit. And so that one's like always kind of been a leg that's challenging and one you want to be ready for. And so the hard part then is having a first leg that can hang with the group, because if you get tagged off to the best in the world with a deficit, it's hard to make that up. But if you get tagged off with them, then, you know, there's always a good chance you can stay with them. And so that's kind of been always one of our challenges in picking an order. And especially with Jessie being such a strong anchor always, it's hard to like pass that up because she's so good in that role. But because it was a World Cup and not a championship, we decided to like test this out and see if Jessie couldn't, you know, break things up a little bit in the first leg and give me a chance to build that gap. And if we could get a big enough gap that could hold on for the next two legs. And so, yeah, that was kind of our thought, that we would just try something new and see where it's at. And yeah, I mean, I think it worked pretty well. It's, you know, like I said, it's always hard to get four people having their best day on the same day. But I think, yeah, we put together a strong team and we all had very strong efforts against our respective competitions in each of our legs. And so it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, you guys look great. And so you had mentioned that it's two laps. Explain to me about the distance, because I have a vague feeling that it's recently been upped and the men's distance has been reduced a little bit to make them equal. Am I like making that up?
Nope, that's exactly right. So okay. It used to be the 4x5K for the women and 4x10K for the men. We've moved to this equal distance. And so it was kind of this debate on what the distance would be. And the consensus was just to go right down the middle. So it's now 4x7.5K for both men and women. And those distances were adopted for World Championships and the Olympics as well. So those will be the distances, at least for the near future, that we'll be doing. And so usually, I mean, just to make it, I mean, you obviously could do 1x7.5K loop, but generally because of TV and like wanting to have a lot of cameras on the course and stuff, it'll usually be a two lap course. So we did 2x3.75 kilometers.
And this is the first race that it's been that distance?
Gosh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think if we did that last year or not.
Oh, okay.
We didn't do it at the championship last year because the championships like get approved so far in advance that by the time the equal distancing went through, the championship was already set up. But I can't remember if we did it in World Cup or not.
Right. What do you think about the distance, or what has been the general consensus about that?
I mean, this was the first time. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely long, like in terms of racing, it was fine. I don't know that I felt that much of a difference, honestly. But when I'm waiting for my teammates to go, it felt long. So, I don't know. Maybe spectators think it's too long. I'm not sure. I do think the women's one in particular was like, we had quite a lot. Well, the men's actually was very exciting too. There were a lot of lead changes. So I don't know if that was the distance or the course or, you know, what led to that. But that always makes for a more interesting event in general, is if it's a little tighter and there's some lead changes throughout the race.
And what do you do when the other skiers are racing? I mean, obviously you're prepping when the first leg is going off,
yeah,
if you're the second, but once you're done, are you out on the course cheering everybody?
Yeah. Usually I, you know, whatever, try to get some warm clothes and drink food, that sort of thing, quickly. And then, yeah, kind of for my cool down, I'll like jog. I mean, it depends a little bit on the venue and the course, but yeah, try to jog out on course a bit and cheer for the other legs. That's kind of like the fun part of the relay, is like, we really are all in it together. So any extra energy I can give to the other legs, it all will help me in the end as well. So that's definitely, sure, like the fun part of it.
And since you mentioned the course, can you compare this course to last week's course and maybe also the temperature, because it's been really cold?
Yeah. The course this weekend was probably about as opposite as the first weekend as you could get. In Jalavari, it's much more gradual terrain and a lot of twists and turns. So it was kind of always something new, like, you know, a little up, a little down, a little right, left, up, down, like just kind of constantly like meandering through the woods there, as opposed to Ruka's like very steep climbs. But, you know, there was only like two per lap. They were just very steep. So it was very different style. Yeah, that's always fun too, because it's like kind of can suit different skier strengths. So that's something, you know, we're always looking at also when picking the relay team, is like, you know, who skis really well in the particular terrain of the venue that we're at, and how can we best use those skills.
So how, like, if you're looking at these last two races, you know, what have you gotten from it? Where do you want to go next? You know, like, now that you've had a couple days perspective on this last race, like, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't think too much has changed within the last 2 weeks. I was, I don't know if like, maybe a little bit surprised, I guess I could say, about how well I raced in Ruka. And I knew I was in good shape, but you never know, like, you know, what does that mean? Because you don't know what kind of shape everyone else is in. And so that was really cool to see that my training had gone well and my fitness was in a really good place and I was in a good place and enjoying racing. And so now it's just kind of this game of like trying to carry it on as long as you can, or at least until, you know, we get a break for Christmas and you can have like that kind of little reset. But, you know, for this period one, we're racing, I'm doing all the races. So it's like two or three races every weekend for 4 weeks. So there's not a whole lot of time to like, you know, change much between the races, especially because, you know, one day spent traveling and then, you know, yeah, we have a few days to ski. And so you can do little things, but it's mostly just about, yeah, trying to maintain that, you know, keep just enough training that you're not like losing fitness for the later half of the season, but not training so much that then you can't, you know, use the fitness you have now over the weekend and in the races. So it is a little bit of a tricky balance, but, you know, and then part of it is also just keeping your head in a good place, like continuing to find ways to enjoy what you're doing and enjoy, kind of settle into like life on the road, because it's a long haul for us, and, you know, kind of getting settled in that sense as well.
Do you enjoy the life on the road? Or have you, yeah, how do you manage it, I guess?
yeah, yes, and I sometimes enjoy it, and sometimes it's really hard. I definitely, especially as I get older and the team gets younger, I love all my teammates. They're wonderful people to hang out with, but we are definitely just like in different life phases, I guess. And so I certainly miss my close friends at home and the community that I have at home. I find that very challenging on the road. But it's also really cool what I get to do. And I love exploring new places, especially on my skis. I think that's just like a really fun way to see the world. And I really enjoy training and racing still. So I try to just, you know, keep that in mind of like why I'm doing this. Like, you know, it's the skiing part that's really fun for me and that I enjoy so much. And so trying to kind of, you know, dig into those aspects a little bit and really enjoy those parts. But yeah, there's always moments that it's tough and you get homesick and you're tired of being around all the same people all the time and missing right, missing your people at home and all that kind of thing. I think the thing I struggle with the most is not necessarily the people or like being around the same people, like they're all wonderful people, but it's just you lose a little bit of your like independence and autonomy because you're operating as a team unit. And, you know, I can't just like hop in my car and go somewhere when I want to. And I really struggle with that. I am a very independent person, and I really thrive off having that kind of a daily autonomy. So I try to find, you know, ways to bring that in. And, you know, if we are staying in a place that I can ski from the hotel, that's like the dream. Then I can kind of operate on my own schedule a little bit, or sometimes taking a little break from the team, and when we have a weekend off, doing something different for a bit, or things like that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned your age, because I remember when I first started watching you on TV and commentators were always talking about how old you were, which at that point was like 30, I think. And it was always sort of this like, oh my God, how is she still around? And I, you know, I'm not hearing that anymore. It seems like maybe there's a greater acceptance of a range of skiers and, you know, age, body type, all that stuff. I mean, do you get that impression?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell, because like, I struggle with it myself. Like I, especially just given the youngness of our team now, it's hard for me not to feel it every day that I'm so much older. And so it's definitely something like I battle in my own head. I don't really know, I guess, what public perception is, if people are like, God, get move on with your life, or if they like find it really cool. Probably a mix of both. I definitely have had, you know, some people reach out and tell me that it's been like inspiring and whatnot. But the thing that I always come back to is like, I didn't start skiing till I was 14, so I was kind of old when I learned to ski as well. And so like for me, I try to think about it like in skiing age. Like, you know, most of my peers started skiing when they were like 3 or something like that. So if my 14 was the equivalent of being 3, then, you know, in terms of the years that I've actually been skiing, like I'm just passing 20 now. So, you know, that's the equivalent of a 25-year-old who started when they were 3.
Right.
And so I think there is something to be said for just like the number of hours and years of doing something that it takes to be good at it. And that's going to look a little different for everyone just based on who you are and how you work. And for me, it definitely took all of those years. Like I just needed that much time to learn how the sport worked and to build my fitness to a place that was like competitive on this level. And so, you know, call it a justification, I guess, if you want, but that's often what I come back to and think about, and just, you know, enjoying like that I did reach this level, and that, you know, I've made a career out of it. And that's something young me just had in her dreams, not in like her actual goals. And so just trying to like enjoy that, even if it did come at a later point in my life, and, you know, hoping that I can still have experienced some of the other things that normal 35-year-olds experience at some other time in my life.
We were just talking about how, you know, performance, like successful performance, is a mix of so much stuff, and, you know, you can't predict it. And, you know, you're bringing something special from your age, whereas the younger athletes don't have that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I mean, maybe I don't have quite as much like pop in my stride as some of them, but, you know, I do have many, many years of experience, and I've had lots of different, I've been at a lot of these venues many times, and, you know, that's definitely worth something. It's also like, I think something that does help me a lot too is just how much our team has changed. It's like when, you know, my first World Cup, I mean, well, when I was, God, I don't even know, I was in high school, and the US team cut the entire women's team. There was no women's cross country ski team. So like, you know, when you're sitting there as a high schooler being like, oh, what future do I have in this? You know, like, why am I doing this sport? And just like, you know, how far we've come, I think gives me a ton of perspective and gratitude for the opportunity to do this, and just gratitude for all the support and belief that we have had from people over the years. And, you know, now we're traveling, we're filling all of our start spots on World Cup, which that definitely didn't happen. We have PTs and doctors and chefs and all kinds of support staff that are like giving so much of their time and energy to help us succeed, and all that's showing in our results. And so it is really cool to see that, and it gives me a ton of gratitude and perspective for kind of this movement that was started so long ago, and to be one little piece of it, and that is something that motivates me and is special.
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, can you talk a little bit about Minnesota coming up, the World Cup Minnesota? I mean, for me, it's just so exciting. I'm going to be there. The thought of just seeing you guys whizzing by me is just super great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty excited for it too. You know, it's funny when they, you know, it was supposed to come in 2020 and then of course the pandemic hit and it was canceled. But the funny part about that is like, I honestly wasn't planning, like I wasn't planning to go because it was just a sprint. And so I was focusing my energy on the distance races at that point, you know, and then it was like, oh, they're never going to do this again. Like they lost so much money off of that cancellation. And it was just, you know, such a heartbreak of a thing. And so then when I heard they, whoever got that energy and momentum going again, like, thank you. I think it was a lot of people, but it suddenly like had this renewed energy. And I think it just, honestly, I think the enthusiasm and excitement for it just like quadrupled from 2020. And I am so excited I get a chance to be part of it. And since I've had a lot of success since 2020, like my community and my family and friends and all these people are so much more invested in the sport as well. And so I have so many people coming to watch those races. And I'm just so excited they get a chance to see what this looks like live. Because, you know, all they do is like see some clips and see the results online when they wake up in the morning. But to see it live, I think is such a unique experience. So I'm really thankful that we get that opportunity to showcase that. And, you know, having been like I was a spectator in the 2002 Olympics in Salt Lake. That's where I grew up. And so, you know, that had a massive impact on me. So I think I also have this unique understanding of how powerful that can be to like have an event like that come to you as a kid in a community and just to kind of like open your eyes as to the possibilities that are out there. And so I really hope that we can, you know, spark just a big wave of enthusiasm and joy for cross-country skiing moving forward and really keep this momentum that we have going for many, many years to come.
I can't see how it would not do that. It's going to be great. Well, thank you so much and good luck for the rest of the season. And we'll be watching you and I'll say hello and I'll wave as you whiz by in Minnesota.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.
How great was that, talking to Rosie Brennan? I hope you enjoyed this special cross-country ski World Cup race report. And thank you to Rosie and the entire U.S. team of athletes and support crew. Check out her show notes page for more on Rosie and things she brought up. Included there is a link to the Minnesota World Cup, which takes place not long from now in February. Also on the website, there are ways to reach me, sign up for the newsletter, listen to all of the episodes, and to support the show through Buy Me a Coffee. Go to hearhersports.com. If you are new to Hear Her Sports, welcome! There are so many guests for you to discover, including ski racers Olivia Bouffard-Nesbitt and Julia Kern. Find two other Alaskans like Lisa Keller. Hear Her Sports is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. To find out more about what they offer, go to evergreenpodcast.com. And finally, thank you for listening. I really appreciate that you're here. I just love learning about female athletes, and I hope you also got something from the episode. Have a great week, and be sure to check back in for the next race report. Bye-bye.
Women's Running Stories, where we explore the intersection between running and life. Because every woman who is committed to a running journey has a story to tell, and this is where you'll find those stories. I am host and producer Cherie Louise Turner. I'm a 53-year-old runner, and together with original music by musician and runner Cormac O'Regan, we bring these inspirational stories to life. Please join us to fuel your adventures.